Hello, OT friends, and welcome to the Uncommon OT series. I'm Patricia Modis, and I'm your host, a Filipino-American, native New Yorker, current California transplant, bulldog mama, and an uncommon occupational therapist myself for the past 22 years. On this podcast, you will hear me proudly feature the unique careers of occupational therapy practitioners working in non-traditional and role-emerging practice areas, settings where OT is uncommon. Be inspired as you listen to these up-close conversations and be energized and motivated to follow in these unconventional paths. Happy listening, friends. So today I am beyond excited to introduce you to not just one, but two guests of honor. We have with us Captain Andrew Antonio and Captain Elaine Pierre Iloa. Captain Antonio and Captain Iloa are both occupational therapists within the U.S. Air Force. They are here joining us today to talk about their journeys as occupational therapists and how they got to where they are. So without further ado, I'd like to present to you Captain Iloa and Captain Antonio. Welcome.
Thanks, Patricia. Thanks for having us. Glad to be here and honored. Feel like a celebrity being on this show here. So thanks to all of you. Appreciate it.
In my eyes, you're both celebrities.
I appreciate that. Big time.
Thank you so much, first of all, for your service to our country. And second of all, for taking the time to, you know, talk to us about how you got to where you are. I had an opportunity to read through your bios and, you know, was just so blown away by the amazing things that you're doing in the armed forces as far as occupational therapy is concerned. I'm just so proud of being able to showcase your work on this platform. So thank you so much for being here.
Of course, our pleasure. 100%.
Pleasure.
So before we get to the nitty gritty, I guess, you know, as usual, I'd love for you to just tell our listeners a little bit about yourselves.
Okay. Well, my name is Alan Pierre Iloa, and I was born in Montreal, Canada. And sometime in 2006, I moved to California, Loma Linda to be precise. To do my master's in occupational therapy. I spent 3 years at that school, got my master's, started working mostly in skilled nursing facilities up until, I would say, 2014, 2015. Then I made a switch to home health and more of an outpatient also settings until 2016, 2017, where I became full-time, mostly concentrating in hand therapy. I went back to school in 2018 at Rocky Mountain University, did my OTD in that school with a hand therapy track, and graduated in 2020. I initiated the application to the Air Force in 2020, I believe, and it wasn't until the end of 2021 that they accepted me. And to make a long story short, here I am proudly serving our country as a U.S. Air Force occupational therapist.
So, wow, I just started, like, you know, you mentioned those dates and that was right during COVID and that was right in the midst of everything. So, gosh, we need to delve into that a little bit. In a moment. How about you, Captain Antonio?
Yeah, so Captain Antonio, Andrew Antonio.
Yeah, so I almost said Dr. Antonio because you're both OTDs and there's this captain and there's this doctor happening. How does that work?
How do you delineate the two?
Yes. What takes priority? I guess does it depend on the setting?
With us, uniform and obviously comes first. So we usually call our colleagues by their rank.
There are exceptions. I've seen exceptions where they'll say, hey, Dr. So-and-so or Doc so-and-so. But if you're ever in doubt, you can always go by the rank because you'll never know whether or not they're, you know, officially a doctor or not. So.
Yes. Got it. Okay. So tell us about you, Captain Antonio.
Of course. So Andrew Antonio was born in North Dakota, Grand Forks, North Dakota, to be exact. The reason why that's a big curveball is because it's North Dakota. and the reason why I am from North Dakota is because I'm also an Air Force brat. So my dad was in the military. He served for 28 years. So all I know is military. At that time, we moved from North Dakota to California, Southern California to be exact, at the age of 3. And the base that we were stationed at was Edwards Air Force Base. And since then, to this day, my parents still live outside of that base. So that's pretty much, so that's pretty much home for me. About 2 hours north of that base, I went to Cal State Long Beach. And graduated with a bachelor's in kinesiology in 2011. And then soon after that, I knew I wanted to do something more with it, obviously, and got into occupational therapy. So I went to the University of St. Augustine and graduated in 2015. And then after that, I obviously wanted to make money because I did not have any money as a new grad. So I took a home health position in the Orange County region for about probably like 3 months or so, just trying to get some income. All the while, I just kept checking applications to see if there were any openings for the jobs that I really wanted. And two of those were inpatient and hands. And we all know with the hand therapy world, in order to get a job in hand therapy, you have to have experience in hand therapy. Mm-hmm. Well, how can you get experience if they don't let you get experience? So I did what a lot of new grads do, and they go inpatient and or SNF. So I went inpatient and went to the acute rehab unit specifically for neuro rehab and stroke rehab for about 2 years. And then all the while I was at that hospital, I knew big picture that I wanted to be in the Air Force. I wanted to wear the uniform. And so I just kept checking in and making sure that I had my ducks in a row to make sure my application was correct, making sure I'm talking to the right people, because it took a while. And Alan can definitely attest to this. It's hard to get the right answer sometimes, and you have to be very persistent if you want to wear the uniform with a specialty, that of occupational therapy or any specialty. So there was a lot of passing around over the past couple of years. And then finally found out that I got the call to commission as an officer in the Air Force in 2017. Dream come true, big time. And then after that, my first base was Travis Air Force Base, which is in Northern California, right across from Napa Valley and Sonoma. Stayed there for about 3 years.
I know that area well.
I know you do. Definitely you. and I actually miss it so much. I feel like a sommelier now every time I go to places talking about wine. I lived right there. But then, after that, after 3 years at Travis Air Force Base, it was time to go. And then I got accepted to the hand therapy and hand surgical fellowship at the Philadelphia Hand to Shoulder Center. So that was out in Philly. So basically all the people that wrote the books on hand therapy and hand surgery, those were the people that I saw walking the halls. And so I got to learn a great amount of knowledge and experience from them. So that was a year-long fellowship. And then in 2021, at the end of that, probably like August, I got orders to come to Kirtland Air Force Base, where I am now, and that is in New Mexico. So I'm about to hit my 1 year mark here in New Mexico. So and that's where we are today.
Wow. So, gosh, I have a gazillion questions, but I guess the first thing that kind of stuck out is you're both hand therapists. Is this prerequisite, or is this just something that the Air Force kind of looks for, or
so with when you apply to be an occupational therapist in the Air Force, OT is recognized as being the hand specialist within the medical field, so they ask they definitely recommend that you have at least 3 years of hand therapy experience. I was very fortunate enough, and And I'll shout out a name here, Lieutenant Colonel DeLumbo, who's actually getting promoted on Monday. So early congrats to him.
Congrats.
He's been my mentor, and he was the one that interviewed me when I wanted to get into Air Force OT. And I didn't have the 3 years experience of hands. And so whatever the powers may be, it still worked out in my favor. Because of that, obviously I'm wearing the uniform now, but primarily hand therapy is what's recognized and recommended
okay.
to apply.
So that's good to know, right? If you have that, or to kind of have that in your skill set. Funny fact, I actually, one of my level two experiences while I was in OT school was in a hand clinic. Like my level two was in a hand clinic. So yeah, it was quite...
That's tough. Yeah.
And then I went into mental health.
Well-rounded OT. That's OT in a nutshell.
There you go.
But I was really great at making splints, I have to say. But yes, Captain Eli, what were you going to add?
I just wanted to make a quick clarification. In California, I have my what they call the HTC, Advanced Practice in Hand Therapy, but I'm not yet a CHT. I did come in the Air Force with quite a few years of hand therapy experience, even though, you know, I always feel like a student. I always feel every time I go to a new setting, I just tell people, listen, treat me as if I didn't know anything. I just want to know how it's done in this particular area, which is how I approached the setting, the military setting. You know, it matters only to a certain point what I've known up till now, because I'm coming to a new house. I'm coming to new customs, new different ways of doing things. Let me learn those ways and then kind of see what I measure those things against what I already know. And that way I felt like I would provide better service, better care to the patient.
100%.
Yeah.
We're the therapists in the scenario. I always say that, right? Like we're the ones who really need to know where we need to be, right? Where our clients are at and where we need to be. And then to go from there, because if you're starting in the wrong place, you're not off to a good start. You might actually have to backtrack quite a bit. So thanks for that clarification, because that also, you know, to me, it says that you don't have to be a CHT, right? Having experience in a hand clinic, perhaps, or just having that knowledge might be enough to get you into the Air Force.
Right.
Correct.
Got it. Okay. So it's a beautiful segue into the next question, which is, you know, and maybe Captain Antonio, you might have talked about this a little bit already, but what inspired you to join the military? What motivated you to do this OT work in the military?
So with OT in general, what inspired me for OT was, and this is full transparency, I actually, when I graduated with my kinesiology degree, it was the big question was what next. And so I kept looking for programs, and I was like, all right, what can I do? I have a lot of prereqs here. Where can they go? They can go to PT, they can go to OT. And so I kept looking, and I was like, oh, I have to retake chemistry because it's expiring, and I hate chemistry. And so it was just this back and forth going. And so I finally found something that landed, and it was occupational therapy. And I said, just like everybody in the world, what is occupational therapy? So I looked it up, and I finally had the chance to shadow a CHT in LA, and I fell in love with it. And so I love the rehab portion, but I also love the fitness and exercise portion of it as well. And I just love the power of the hands, right? And I spoke to you about this in the past, but the hands are so powerful, right? Mm-hmm. They can communicate, they can destroy, they can manipulate. There's just so many things that the hand can do. And when you don't have that, you lose a component of your identity, your occupation, mm-hmm. or at least it shifts, right? And so I wanted to be that bridge from getting back to what is meaningful and purposeful to you. And with the Air Force, it was a no-brainer. Like, I was wearing the uniform as a kid, just playing around and watching my dad and doing junior ROTC and ROTC, and then eventually direct commissioning. It was something that I wanted to do. I knew I wanted to wear the uniform. I just didn't know how. And now, knowing that there was a specialty in occupational therapy in the Air Force, it was like, wow, it's a perfect fit. Like, I get to do what I want to do, what I love doing, but also fulfill my dream at the same time. So the ultimate service is exactly why I'm doing it.
Oh, that's
Amen
beautiful.
to
I
that.
love that
Amen to
you've
that.
bridged both. And yeah, what a beautiful story. Captain Eloy, what about you? What motivated you?
Well, I'm gonna have to be fully transparent. The idea of military life wasn't something I was thinking about until 2020. I have a friend of mine from my childhood years. Well, I would say my teenage years, all the way back in Canada, who's also a musician like me, and he's a musician in the Air Force. He's currently stationed in Japan, I believe. And basically, he kept telling me about the Air Force, and it was kind of nice to hear how it was doing, but I didn't really feel like it applied to me up until COVID happened. And at the time, I was finishing my capstone project for my OTD, and I was doing travel gigs after travel gigs. And with COVID, with the pandemic, all my gigs, all my travel contract kept getting canceled. All the so-called non-essential surgeries were being postponed, which means that patients weren't being seen for outpatient OT, which means in turn that there was not a need for travel OTs. And it was a very difficult time financially, and it was a very brutal wake-up call for me personally, because it's like, okay, what do I do next? And that's when, around that time, the thought of getting into the Air Force started making sense from a practical standpoint. And it was like, okay, let me see what this thing is about. I did not see myself as an officer. I didn't really understand what the Air Force life was about. But after talking to my friend, Sergeant Dormeus is his name, and after talking to my recruiter, it's starting to the pieces started kind of falling into place. It started becoming more and more interesting, and not so much, oh, okay, this is something I can have some financial stability, but it became something that was a bit more, something that I haven't felt, or I hadn't felt much about my career as an occupational therapist. I felt genuine interest in being more than just, coming to work, see my patients, and then go home.
Yes.
It really started meaning something to the effect of what can I bring as far as my expertise, as far as my knowledge base to this new organization, that this new family I was, about to join. So it was not an easy transition in many aspects, but it was, for me, it was a no-brainer. It was really kind of a do or die situation. And I'm grateful to say that I definitely did, and I definitely did not die.
Yes, you did
You did it. I am so just in awe of your stories. And one was kind of Captain Antonio, it's in your genes, right? You were born for this. And Captain Eloy, here you were practicing OT, and then you didn't really connect with it until you learned a little more about it and then started to feel that connection, right? It sounds like this is both your work are both, it's centered around purpose for you and kind of how you want to evolve as an occupational therapist. It excites me when I hear things like, oh, I was trying to see how, you know, what kind of spin I can put into things, right? Because that is like spoken like a true OT in an uncommon setting, because nobody knows what we do. Nobody knows our magic, right? So the idea is to sprinkle that magic in the just right way so that you can impact this group, right? So I heard that in everything that you said, Captain Eloy.
Thank you.
Yeah, so, okay. Maybe we can segue into, you know, each of you just describing, because I know you're both in the Air Force, but you're both in totally different settings. So maybe you can describe to us a little bit about the uncommon OT work that you do, the group that you serve, right? Whom do you serve within the armed forces, and some of the needs that you might be addressing?
Okay. Well, before I go any further, full disclosure, today was my very first day where I did. I started seeing patients. I finally got my credentials.
Yeah. Got him. Here we go.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing! Yeah. I'm so glad we're here to talk about it. So what happened today? Tell us.
Well, you know, then without revealing too much, I had two patients to eval, and I mean, it's so crazy. I think the last time I saw patients were the last week of last December. It was about five months ago, and it just I'd never thought I would see this, but I missed it. You know, I've missed just seeing patients, just you know, getting their stories, you know, just doing the whole biomechanical framework type of collection, data collection. You know, get their grip strength, get their you know, just assess the nitty gritty.
Yeah.
It's just a great feeling to be with patients again. It's just a great feeling to do what I was selected basically to do.
Yes.
So, I mean, when you look at in my particular base, which is in Ohio, Wright-Patterson Air Force Base, the patients we tend to see is outpatient, a typical outpatient hand clinic. You have your flexor tendon repairs, you have your carpal tunnel, cubital tunnel, osteoarthritis, you know, just basically the type of diagnosis, the type of cases you would expect to see in a private clinic or hospital outpatient clinic. I think the difference is most, if not all, the clientele we serve is our active duty, our VA, or family of said active duty or VA patients. It's always interesting to, you know, because, you know, not only the OTs are active duty officers, but, you know, the hand surgeon also is an active duty officer. So, you know, it's pretty much, for me so far from what I've seen, it's pretty much the same as a typical hand clinic. It's just, we tend to wear the uniform.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, well, congratulations on your first day.
Thank you.
It sounds like a great day. I mean, you had a couple of vows in there and, you know, really got started with a couple of clients, right? That's
right.
That's where you get started. And then from there, it kind of just takes a life of its own.
Mm-hmm. One thing I would also add, and that I'm grateful for, is beyond the whole, you know, clinical setting or clinic, outpatient clinic setting, there's also the opportunity to be involved in, you know, other projects. Or I'm sure Captain Antonio knows more about those projects, but for me, what I've been able to do so far is to use my ergonomic background and do a presentation along one of the physical therapy captains, and kind of present the different flights or different, you know, different groups inside the medical center, about the benefits of, you know, proper feeding, or proper, I'm trying to find my words here, but, you know, just ergonomic.
Like proper body mechanics, right?
Yes.
And is this all when you're sitting inside an airplane? Is that kind of what you're simulating? Because I don't know, I'm thinking Air Force, right? Like, yeah. Everyone's sitting in different things.
That's fair. That's fair.
That is actually a very, very, very good topic that I would let Captain Antonio speak more of.
All right. So yeah, this answer is kind of twofold, because, you know, like the profession stays constant, right? And that's OT, but the duties and the responsibilities can change base by base. And so I could at least break it down by each, you know, base that I was stationed at. So the first one was Travis Air Force Base, and it's the flagship hospital of the Air Force. So it's the biggest one, but it's not much bigger than Wright Pat. Like, those are like brother and sister in terms of how big the medical facilities are. So with that, yeah, what Elaine had said, we were basically running an outpatient clinic. Right. And so you've got your hand surgeons there. You've got your PT clinic. You've got your OT clinic. You've got orthopedics right there down the hall. What was unique about Travis Air Force Base is that it had an inpatient unit as well. And so with that, there was also a mental health inpatient unit. Mm-hmm. So this being the biggest hospital in the Air Force, it's going to have all the departments. Right. And so a typical day in that setting would be, I would have my outpatient schedule. I would see patients probably like 10 to 15. And then if I had a no-show, I would check the inpatient census real quick, see if there's a total hip, a total shoulder, reverse total shoulder, anything like that. Run upstairs, do that eval, and then come back down in time for my outpatient consult. Okay. Mm. And then every Monday and Friday, I would host a mental health group, inpatient mental health group. So I would go back up to the lockdown unit and then talk about down regulation, stress management, imagery, goal setting, sleep, all of those things we would talk about then. And mm-hmm. then every second Tuesday of the month, there was there's a labor and delivery department. So I would go there and teach a pregnancy class on ergonomics, but also adaptive equipment, but as well as, and we don't like to do this, but self-diagnose, right? So mm-hmm. I would have all the moms there like, all right, put your hands up in front of you. I want you to go ahead and tuck those thumbs into your palms, make a fist, and then slowly tilt them down. If you feel anything, let me know. And they're like, oh my, oh wow. And then boom, segue to decrevanes, or we'll talk about cubital tunnel or carpal tunnel. And so we would talk about things to expect during pregnancy as well as mm-hmm. postpartum. And so those were huge. And then we also talk about positioning. So now that I have a child of my own, I'm more intact with this now. So the boppy pillow, you can pop that underneath your arm. Right. Before I would just say you could get like a holster or a pillow. Now it's Boppy. I have no disclosures. I'm not sponsored by Boppy.
You can be an affiliate now.
I can be an affiliate. So things like that. And that would be a typical day. And we're not even, and Alan can attest to this, and he'll get more of this as he gets in longer and longer, is there's going to be a lot more demands on the officer side and the military side than what we're doing clinically. And mm-hmm. so you factor in what I had just mentioned, but then now you've got to do the Air Force side and the officer side of it. And that's a whole nother story. So that would be that's what the job demands would be at the hospital. Mm-hmm. And then the base that I'm at right now is an embedded position. And so when I say embedded, it's basically in a unit that is not medical. So in our case, this is the training pipeline for our special warfare students. So these are students who are trying to be special warfare operators or special ops guys. And so they're going through this 1 to 2 year long training. And they have the luxury of having this team attached specifically just for them. So they have a team of PT, OT, athletic trainers, nutrition, dietitians. And they also have an operational psychologist as well as strength and conditioning coaches. So if you think about it, it's almost like a model of a professional team. Mm-hmm. You know, they get hurt. We patch them up right there. They do training every day of the week. If they need to talk to operational psychologists about professional development, they have them there as well. And then if they need to eat right, because they are, and we actually just did a little study, the average operator or student here burns about at least 4,000 calories a day while they're out here. And so, you know, being able to successfully manage their diet and their hydration is also key.
Yeah.
Because it is not cold this time of the year. It is stinking hot. So what we do here is, preventative stuff. So maintenance programs for them. But then we also address the musculoskeletal injuries that they have as well. And part of their trainings that they have, our job is to optimize their performance. So whether it's climbing ropes, ladders, things like that, the goal is to help supplement that, optimize that performance so that they can do it the best they can with the least restriction possible. And so that is our plan there. But the biggest thing about what we're doing here now, and this is like a plug too, because this is just now being introduced to the Air Force, is sympathetic nervous system suppression training. And it's the ability to get in a sympathetic state and utilize the downregulation techniques taught by our team so that you can downregulate to where you can execute safely and efficiently. There's a study too that shows like at 115 beats per minute, an individual starts to lose fine motor control. Mm-hmm. And as the heart rate goes up, they tend to lose more things. Like they get tunnel vision, auditory loss, things like that, right? Mm-hmm. And so our job here, and it's a program that we're trying to implement here, is how can we simulate an environment like that, get them at their heart rate, simulate a safe environment where they can perform these tasks that they need to do on the field, starting IVs, like combat medicine, carrying litters, getting in and out of a helicopter, getting off of a helicopter from a ladder, being able to navigate rough terrain, and able to fire your weapon. And so all of these things anyone can do, I say anyone, but they can do, they can do at rest, right? Think of a task that you can do easily, right? But then you up the ante a bit by increasing their heart rate. Mm-hmm. And then you add strobe lights, and then you add smoke, and then you add noise, then you add the time constraint. So all of these variables are put into the program, and it forces them to practice those techniques so that they can be better people, operators, medics, fighters. And so that's the next step with what OT is doing in the special warfare world, which is pretty exciting. Yeah.
Wow.
That was a long one.
Wow. I just can't say wow enough. I mean, I totally see OT. I see how you're breaking it down, right? It's like a big giant activity analysis there. And
that's exactly what I use too.
Yes.
I got so excited with it too. Executive functioning, visual perceptual skills, money. Nailed it.
Yes. And oh my gosh. So my first question is, was this always a position within the Air Force or within the special ops unit of the Air Force? Or is this something that, you know, that you sort of helped design and create? It's so definitely sounds super well suited for an occupational therapist.
I definitely agree. I cannot take the credit for being here in this position. There was people before me who had started it. But initially we weren't in this setting. We were in the hospitals. And then now there's this movement to trying to get to outside of the hospital walls. So originally it wasn't. And so this is new. Alan was like I think you're the 22nd OT that we have here in the Air Force. So we have a total of 22 OTs in Air Force. And then there's two that are in special warfare. So you're looking at 50% of them right here. And the other one is in San Antonio. And so our hope is to, if this program, you know, fires off and goes crazy and successful, which we feel like it will, and then we can start getting more people in these positions too. And so, Alan, we're going to hit you up and we're going to send you to New Mexico.
I'll be waiting by my phone.
Boom, got it.
Oh, amazing. I mean, 22 OTs for the entire U.S. Air Force does not sound like it's enough, honestly.
It's not.
Preaching to the choir.
No. Yeah. So, okay. So is there anything else about your settings that you'd like to add aside from what you've mentioned? Yeah.
You know, while Captain Antonio was speaking, it dawned on me that a huge benefit of, you know, working for the Air Force is that not only do they, you know, are they open to evidence-based practice, but they, you know, it's almost as if it's something that they're really pushing for, you know, and it's strongly encouraged for us to be able to back up, you know, our clinical choices or you know, any ideas or any projects that we would submit, you know, and they, so it in a sense, it keeps, not only this keeps us on our toes in terms of clinicians, but it also allows for us to push the boundaries of our profession even further. You know, I wasn't fully aware of what special warfare, right, consisted of. But, you know, hearing Captain Antonio describe it, for me, I see this as transferable knowledge. Yes. You know, that could even benefit the civilian world, you know, yes, especially in the times we're living in, you know.
Absolutely.
You know, it's sad to say, but I think it's something that might be needed in the long run, in maybe
absolutely,
in the short run.
100%. I know, Captain Antonio, you already talked about this a little bit, like a typical day for you, right? And I loved how you went from one unit to another unit and worked with a different population, you know, here and there. Would any of you or each of you like to describe what a typical day might be like for you in your setting?
Well, I'm not sure if I'm qualified yet to speak of my typical day, because I literally just started my first typical day today. But I, for the time being, it consists of seeing patients. Right now, my biggest thing is to get my feet firmly planted in clinical life in the Air Force. You know, the rehab team over at Bright Path, they want to make sure that I get my bearings as a clinician. They want to make sure that I'm comfortable in that role, and then slowly but surely, yep, they will introduce the officer component into my my workload, which, yes, I really appreciate.
That means you got a pretty good leadership with you, because as an entry level captain or entry level clinician and captain, it's like be the best and at your job, right? Sprinkle a little bit of you know, professional development and leadership opportunities, but first, nail your job. And I already know you, so I think you're good with that. But
thank you.
Yeah, so yeah, definitely. But yeah, I alluded to it already with what a typical day looks like. But usually, where we're at now, most of the busyness happens in the morning when the trainees come in, and they do their training for about one hour and a half to about 2 hours. That's with warm up and you know, instruction afterwards. But we'll first thing in the morning, we'll come in there. We'll see them train. As soon as they finish, anybody that has any elements that they need addressed, go ahead and see athletic trainers, go see PT, go see OT as needed. And then they'll do that. And then they'll go off and do their actual operator training, whether it's like tactical practice, tactical medicine, whether it's technical rescue. So they'll sometimes go be out on a free fall wall and practice rappelling and rescue. Sometimes we'll practice the tactical medicine, like I mentioned, where they have to assess the patient for burns and breathing and airway. And then sometimes they'll practice going, kicking down doors and clearing rooms, you know? And so depending on what phase they're in will be dictated on their schedule. But for the most part, we are available throughout the whole day should they need anything.
Okay.
And yeah.
I love it. So, you know, I'm thinking in some settings, or in those settings, like a a functional task would be someone breaking down a door, right? Or someone
Correct.
Jumping off a helicopter. And that would be the activity that you would have to analyze and kind of work with folks on. So fascinating. Can you, what are some skills that you're generally skills that you address on a daily basis with your patients?
So with the executive functioning, you've got, you know, memory, attention, problem solving, right? And so one of those is while the individual is assessing a patient in the TAC medicine phase, like, are they able to assess the patient, but then at a split second, maintain attention to where if somebody comes out of the blue, are they able to draw their weapon quick enough and boom, fire or not fire, right? They call it fire or no fire. So being able to differentiate whether they're a bad guy or a good guy. Mm-hmm. And how fast can you do that? And so that goes into visual perceptual skills too.
Mm-hmm.
So now you're looking at visual discrimination. You're looking at figure ground. And now you're also looking at visual memory. So all of those things in one component are the things that I'm looking at. And those are the things that we've addressed. And once this program starts going, that's what we're going to keep practicing on. And so that they can do it not only at rest, but they can do it when they're heart rate is like off the charts.
Yes.
So those are amazing. That's an example. It's incredible what they do. I can't imagine. Yeah. Like there's some things that I can't even do at rest and let alone, you know, at the level that they are. And it's one of those things, like they don't have the opportunity to really practice in a safe simulated zone and area because the only time they can practice it is when they have their testing. But then if they practice it real world, and they fail, we all know what happens if they fail real life.
Yes.
Right. So it's, we need it in between there and we have it now. We hope to have it now.
Oh, that's fascinating. And to have your lens as a part of that training team, that's, you know, just going to make our military, I think, more effective and everything that they're trying to do. So anything you'd like to add, Captain Eloy, as far as skills?
Yes. Actually, well, just more about the population that we're working for, we're serving. A big thing is readiness, you know, and fitness. You know, yes, we are outpatient clinic focusing mostly on upper extremity, but as any good OT will tell you, when you treat a patient and when you work with a patient, even though the diagnosis may be upper extremity based, it's, you know, you do have to consider the whole person, you know, how does this condition affect his or her ability to, you know, react in a hostile situation or just from a fitness standpoint. You know, every 6 months or every year for the more fit among us, we have to take a physical fitness test. And let's, you know, some of those exercises consist of, you know, doing push-ups or doing planks. So if you're looking at a radial fracture, you know, there's some issues that come with doing push-ups, unfortunately. So we have to, you know, work with our clientele to get them back into a place where they're able to complete the task at hand.
Yeah.
Or we have, otherwise we have to, you know, to put them on some type of profile.
Yes.
So there's as far as the skills that comes with you know, working with those patients, I mean, it's the typical skills I feel more many OTs are using in a hand therapy setting. You know, just you know, addressing strength, addressing range of motion. You know, the more biomechanical hand factors.
Yes,
but,
got it.
You know, you also want to look at you know, that top-down approach and look at the occupation, the occupational performance, and how, you know, what components of that meaningful occupation is affected by their injuries or by their condition, and how we can help modify or just re-educate the patient in finding alternative ways to accomplish, you know, the occupation that they may not be safely able to accomplish.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it's as simple as a 2-3 minute education on ergonomics, but sometimes it can go much deeper.
Yes. Oh, thank you so much for sharing and giving us those examples. It gave me a picture of what it might be like in a session. So yeah, thanks so much for that. Can we talk about some recent lows or recent successes that you've had within your roles? I know, Captain Eloy, you've just started in your new post, and maybe, you know, that's part of the lows, is kind of just getting started and getting settled, right?
True.
Well, the whole getting started, it was for me personally, with having no military background, it definitely was a huge adjustment. And I mean, huge adjustment, you know, going to the officer training school, which was, I'm understanding, different than the COT, Commission Officer Training, I think.
Correct.
Is what it used to, okay. Yeah.
So what we know as boot camp, like some of us layman's people?
I guess that's how we would call it. Although it was, it's not to the same level as boot camp, but, you know, again, for me, with no military background, it was pretty much, you know, the along those lines.
And, hey, you made it,
well
buddy.
Said. Yeah, I was like, well said. Very, very good answer. Politically safe too. Yeah, nice.
they shift us into officers or entry level officers.
Yes, and you're, you know, here to talk about it today. So yes, that's fantastic.
Yes. But besides that, you know, just you know, the phrase "hurry up and wait" became took on a whole new meaning. You know, the whole process of applying and waiting, and, you know, just going through periods of inactivity, and then all of a sudden, okay, next week you have to be there, or we need those things done by tonight. So it's just, you know, once you get into the Air Force system, you have to understand that in many ways, you are operating on the Air Force time.
Yeah.
You know, and the sooner you understand that, the sooner you make peace with that fact, the more enjoyable of an experience it is going to be for you and for the people you work with, including your family as well.
Yes.
Yeah.
Spoken like a true OT again, you know, understanding systems, right, and how they work, and how you can't go against the grain, and how do you work among, you know, within it, right?
Right. But yeah, pretty much the high for me is just discovering this new system, this new organization, if you will. I've talked to Captain Antonio, to another OT named Captain Haynes. I've talked to many people in the Air Force, but it's one thing to get the accounts of everybody, and it's another thing to experience it for yourself. It's a lot to take in, but it's not a bad experience to take in. It's just, in many ways, I feel like I'm in school again, and I'm learning something new all the time, every day.
Yeah. Oh, wow. Well, thank you for sharing that with us.
Mm-hmm.
How about you, Captain Antonio? Would you like to
Lows.
share any lows or any successes that you've recently had?
Definitely low was a time when I got here at the special warfare squadron here. I had just come off of that fellowship that right where it was just straight ortho hands, got my CHT out of it, like boom, primed, ready to go. And then I come here to New Mexico and it's a whole different pace. And when I say pace, it's like, the students that we get here, probably, about 30, 60, about 90, 100 per fiscal year, we would say. But what was challenging was where I couldn't figure out where I fit in this model at first, because we're known to be occupational therapists who do upper extremity, but now we have this dedicated team of athletic trainers who are like the experts of like frontline medicine. It's like, man, I've learned so much from our ATs. Shout out to my ATs over there. And then my physical therapist as well. Like, I've learned so much from them, techniques that I've never done before that I'm doing now because of them. And so now you're trying to find yourself in this puzzle. I'm like, man, where do I fit if they can do upper extremity as well? And where can I fit and help? And then that's where I started challenging, like, what's my purpose, right? Occupation, what's my purpose? And so, that's when we found the sympathetic nervous system training. And I think that's where we can get a big bang for our buck here in special warfare community. But, I think we have so much respect for all these disciplines here. And I realized it wasn't a matter of like who does what. It wasn't a matter of like, this is my thing, this is your thing. It was a matter of like accepting and appreciating everybody's experience, regardless of the credentials, and then taking care of the mission. And so that was also a high in itself, right? And so with the ATs now, we've got the system now where it's like the OTs are like the force multiplier now. So when the patient comes in and they're hurting at their elbow, wrist, and it hasn't gotten better, or if it's a little, a little more severe than what it appears to be, then the ATs and physical therapists know to filter it up to OT. And then they get to me, it's like, okay, it must be pretty bad, or it just hasn't gotten better. And so we've got this really good understanding with everybody. And I love the model that we have here. And so that was a low, but then that was also a high in itself. So.
It sounds like such a holistic approach. I love everything about it. Again, everyone's expertise. It reminded me of, when I worked in an HIV day treatment program in New York, where, here funding obviously came from a lot of private donors and also grants, but the approach was just so holistic. We had a nurse practitioner, mental health, medical, nursing, nutritionist, OT, acupuncturist. There wasn't a PT, but art therapist, right? So it was very holistic nonetheless. I couldn't help but sort of see that here, and I love that you're a part of that. There's again, our knowledge of systems and how to work amongst systems, right? And in my experience, it's really the most important part is understanding how we can complement that
Bingo.
big
That
piece
is
of the
it,
pie,
right?
right? We're not here to steal anyone's thunder, but we certainly know enough and we know our skills enough, and we can look at a situation and say, this is what we can bring to the picture.
Wow, that was well said. I think we should just end right there. I think that's
Well, you're doing all
really.
that over there in the armed forces, and I'm just so proud of that, and just so impressed
Yeah,
by
I'm
all
proud
of
of
these
you
things.
too, Captain Antonio.
I'm proud of you too, Alan. I'm proud of all of you. My
So
goodness.
much pride going on right now in this episode. Oh my
Yeah.
gosh. And I again, it's so special because it's uncommon, right? So again, this is, there are officers in the armed forces, but again, here you are starting something different. You are informing, in fact, other healthcare professionals about your expertise and what you can really bring to the table. So to me, that's a valuable service, to the world and also to our profession.
And I mean, in a sense, it's kind of another low that's really a high in disguise. You know, the fact that we are so few occupational therapists, it's kind of fertile ground for us to really develop all of those programs that that kind of set the stage for other OTs in the future to build up on, you know.
Absolutely. And we can be in all of these programs within the armed forces. I mean, you talked about going to the mental health unit, right? I mean, we could, there are, you know, there could be sort of a follow-up programs in the end, like groups that you can start. I mean, I'm just, my mind is is going everywhere. So just the potential. Thank you again for sharing all of that. Let's segue into advice, right? Because we have listeners who are interested in following your path and are very curious about following your path. So I love that I have you both, one who is destined to be this and one who kind of stumbled upon this and is, you know, along the way has learned, you know, has, you know, sort of gained a love for it. What advice would each of you give to our listeners who would like to follow along?
My advice, hurry up and wait.
Amen. Is that some kind of Air Force slogan or something? Hurry up and wait? Okay, yeah, we might have to quote you both on that.
Unfortunately, it is.
Explain that to us.
I'm not going to say I have not been indoctrinated, but no, I'm just kidding. no, I would say in the context I'm saying this sentence is, don't feel like you have to figure yourself out from the get-go. You know, for me, you know, I went through so many phases in my career. I'm not sure if I'm want to continue doing this, to I would love this, to where do I fit in doing this. So, you know, take the time to explore what OT has to offer. You know, if I would give any new grad an advice is, your first job, don't do it for, no matter how much someone or an employer or a recruiter is willing to pay you, figure out what you want to do. Yeah. Even if the job doesn't pay as much, you know, that's you the financial aspect of it, you will figure it out afterwards. But focus on finding yourself and how, where do you fit in the world of occupational therapy.
Yeah.
That was deep. That was good.
Great advice.
Now, if you're looking at the Air Force or Army or Navy or USPHS, Commissioned Corps, then just talk to as many, you know, just network. Just find a way to network the same way I did, whether it was on Instagram, LinkedIn, you know, don't feel like you're stalking people, because you'll find out that, you know, if you approach people properly, they'll be more than willing to share their knowledge with you and kind of help you figure out what's the best way to get into the branch that you want to get into. You know, be prepared to face the fact that you're not just going to be an occupational therapist. You're going to have a lot more things, a lot more responsibilities that come along with the job of being an excellent occupational therapist. Mm-hmm. So that's just something you'll have to make peace with, unless, you know, you're willing to come in as a civilian OT in the armed, you know, whether it's for Army or Air Force. I'm not too sure about the Navy, but I know those two branches tend to offer more civilian positions.
Ah, okay. That's an interesting piece of tidbit too. Okay.
Also the VA also.
Yes, the VA.
Okay. Yeah.
I did my level one field work at the VA.
Nice.
Yeah, I loved it. I think that's kind of, that's where it got all ignited and sparked up. Yeah. So how about you, Captain Antonio? Any advice?
Advice. Wow. If I were telling my younger self, there's this saying that goes, no one cares about your career more than yourself. Right. And so we use that a lot in the Air Force too. You have to be very persistent if you want to join the Air Force. This is my plug too, because I'm the OT, Air Force OT recruitment officer now. So here's my plug. I have to do it.
if they want to get into the Air Force, they should speak to you, right?
Yeah, actually, yes. And so hopefully you guys can get my contact info should be attached to it. So
yes.
Feel free to reach out. But yeah, if you want to join the Air Force as an occupational therapist, understand that it is a specialty career field in the Air Force. So what that means is that you are going to be directly commissioned as an officer once you complete your training. And so contrary to other ways of becoming an officer, usually you have to do 4 years of ROTC along with earning your regular undergraduate degree, and then you go off after you graduate. But here with special professions, specialties like OT, PT, nursing, chaplain, judge, advocate, those things, doctors, you are able to skip that time frame and just go straight to training and then pick up rank. And the rank is dependent on how many years you had practice on the civilian side. Usually that counts to it. So there are cases where you can skip rank. And so Alan was able to skip two grades, second lieutenant and first lieutenant, and became a captain. I came in because I think my experience was about 3 to 4 years. It covered my second lieutenant and a little bit of my first lieutenant, and then put on captor pretty soon after. But the one thing that I had found is you're going to get a lot of passing around. So you're going to call a recruiter and you're going to say, I'm an OT. I want to be an OT in the Air Force as an officer. What do I do? And they're going to either have the answer for you or they won't. And then they may send you to someone else who they think may have it. And then they may tell you or may not. And so you just got to be very persistent and be that constancy to purpose, right? Like, remember why you were doing this and why you want to join, because you're going to be tested. And so you have to find a health professions recruiter. And I quote that. Yeah. So look for an Air Force health professions recruiter, and they will point you in the right direction because their specialty is health professional officers. And so once you find one of those, then you can talk to them, and then they'll basically just segue you straight into what you need to do. So be persistent. My biggest one. And Alan, I remember talking to you over the course of like a year and a month. You're like, man, they're not getting back to me. And I was like, I know, I don't know. Hurry up and wait. I got nothing for you. But he was persistent. He was definitely persistent and constant to his purpose. And I am just so happy that he's like here and in right at seeing patients for the first time, because I remember when we were talking and you were like, it's a no-go. I can't do it anymore. I have to be a contractor civilian. Yeah. And now day one in uniform. It is so crazy. I love it.
It's so crazy because, I mean, you've seen it. It was a roller coaster is what it was. But one thing I would definitely echo that Captain Antonio said, it's imperative. The recruiter that you need is a Air Force medical recruiter. They're gonna set you in the right direction. As soon as you pick up the phone and dial whatever number, I don't remember what it is, it's ask for a medical recruiter.
Got it. That's such great advice. It almost sounds like, I don't know, they're testing your persistence. It's part of the assessment process, you know, like if they can make it through the application and the waiting, and then maybe they've got what it takes to.
There you go. Now, I wish I had told myself that a couple of years ago.
Well, a little bit of truth telling. Once you make it to the application and, you know, they select you, it's not over. There's still officer training school to go through. And, you know, that you'll be tested too. If you have no, even if you have some military background or understanding of what is expected, in many ways, it's going to put you to the ringer. You know, you may have to do things Well, you may have to go outside your comfort zone. That's it, mate. You will have to go outside your comfort zone. So, and I'm not saying this to scare anybody. I'm just saying this so you're prepared, you know, fitness wise, you know, mental wise. Mm-hmm. I mean, I came from a doctoral degree background, and you know, I'm not gonna lie, I did not expect to be challenged, you know, with the curriculum, but I was.
Yes,
it was not easy stuff, you know. And was I homesick many times? Did I have self-doubt? Yes, I did. But you know, like Captain Antonio said, I knew what I was in for. And if you make it through the whole application process, chances are you know why you're in this for. So mm-hmm. just push forward, even if it's uncomfortable, especially when it's uncomfortable, just push forward.
Oh, that's such great advice. And I appreciate your transparency, right? Like, this is what this show is about. It's kind of really having our listeners, you know, get a realistic idea of what it's like to go through your path. And, you know, but if you can be an OT, I think you can do this too, right?
Hey, there you go.
There it is.
Being an OT is no easy task. I tell everybody that. Listen, no. If you can be an OT, you can start a business. You
Ain't
can
that
you can
the
start
truth.
An LLC. Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. All right. So, are there any common myths or misconceptions that you'd like to demystify about your role?
The role, I would say that with Air Force OT, that you will be doing hand therapy primarily as what you're recognized as. But like you had mentioned earlier, there is a case where you may have to go to a base overseas and where they do nothing but pediatrics. Mm-hmm. So I had to dust off my filing cabinet of OT school assessments for kids, if that's the case. Mm-hmm. Denver, Peabody, all that. I couldn't even tell you what that means other than that. But yeah, there's a position there in Germany where Major Dossett is out there doing EDIS. And so that is basically pediatrics for an early intervention for the DOD families and, you know, the military and things. So yeah, so you may have that opportunity to go there too. So if you're not 100% gung-ho for hands, you know, there is a chance that you can do pediatrics.
Yes.
You know, so that's there.
And it sounds also like, you know, even with your work sort of like in the psychiatric department, right? Like there's so much opportunity to start doing cognitive based work, maybe even like mm-hmm. mindfulness stuff, right? And meditation and bringing in, you know, you talked about sensory strategies, right? This is a whole new, like the polyvagal theory and, you know, ways in which one can really calm the central nervous system and, you know, sort of live in, you know, live life in a more kind of regulated way.
Mm-hmm. It's like a blessing and curse, right? Like it's blessing because we have the background and the skill base to do these things. But the curse is like, it's never been done before. So now you're like, I have no reference whatsoever. So that is it right there.
That's okay because we network, right? Mm-hmm. And now we know each other.
Here
and,
we are.
You know, I'm already thinking of a couple of people in my, you know, that you can connect with who can really, just talk to you a little bit about their work. And it's, you know, it's I find it to be an exciting challenge just because it's a whole new space, right? We're here to introduce, again, our magic, right? Like, oh, look what we can do. Look what we can offer. And again, we're just talking about, you know, what we know right now. But we talked earlier off the record about, you know, doing home modifications mm-hmm. and starting nonprofits and such, right? So I think this is just the beginning of, you know, so many other conversations within occupational therapy in the military.
Definitely.
Alan, there's one of the important demystifiers too was, Alan, did you come in thinking that you would get your loans paid off 100% when you signed up?
Well, my situation is different. It was never a question that I asked because not wanting to dump my business too much, but I didn't really have any loans.
Nice.
So
I'm living with you.
That's a big deal. That's a giant deal.
That's huge.
I got 99 problems, but a loan is not one of them.
There it is.
You did. Yeah. You said it. So I was never too sure what that conversation was about, but it didn't apply to me, so I never really pondered too much. Maybe you can clarify for the listeners.
Yeah, I got a lot of inquiries about it from people who were interested in joining, and that they thought that was one of the incentives. However, the Air Force does not pay for your tuition 100%, and there is no loan forgiveness package where you sign up and all right, all your loans are gone. Congratulations. Mm-hmm. But what they do have is a loan repayment program. So what it is you, once you get in, so you have to be in already, you have to apply to this loan repayment program where they offer you a lump sum of money for 2 years. And in exchange, you owe 2 years on the back end of your service commitment. And in the beginning, I was like, perfect. I'm just going to keep applying because I was planning to do 20. I'll keep going until that water runs dry. Now they have decided that they're going to give you a capped amount. So you can't just keep reapplying. So let's say for arbitrary number's sake, $100,000, they'll just give you that. And that's all they're going to give you.
Okay. But all in the same at the front, like they'll front you that many and then you'll just pay it back like a loan kind of?
No, it's you basically, for us, I'll give you the specific numbers. It's about 30 grand for 2 years. So 30 grand is the first year, 30 grand the next year. And then after that, you reapply, they'll give you another 30 and another 30. Mm. What you owe them is just time in service, another 2 years. So every time you apply, you owe two.
It's like a scholarship almost.
Yeah, there you go.
Is that what they call a service commitment bonus? Because I think someone told me about this this week or last week, and I wasn't too sure what that was about.
It might be a little bit different. I think that's maybe them saying like, hey, if you add another couple more years right now, like if you agree to it and we can lock you down, then we will give you a bonus.
Oh, I see.
Yeah. And then there's also, they also have board specialty pay though. So you have opportunities to make more once you're in for bonuses. And if you have a specialty like CHT or NDT or anything like that, you can definitely apply for that. And they'll give you, I think the amount is 2 grand per year and it's broken up in increments every month. And so that's a good one. So yeah.
Well, this might be a good way to segue into money matters, right? So, not sure. How do you get paid?
Oh, that's a great question. Alan, you're probably more familiar right now because I'm hanging out at the finance department every day.
Oh, is that what I do now? Honestly, I'm not too sure how it works because all I know is I look at my at the website, I see the paycheck, I'm like, okay, that's my paycheck.
Hey, simple man.
Simple man. But
as long as it clears, right?
Yes. But I think the best way to describe it is we're paid according to our rank. And according to also our whether we're single or married, and there's this thing called BHA, BHS, which varies again by our status and also our location. So if we're somewhere really expensive, like Southern or Northern California. Then our BAH, which is for the housing, right? And BAS, which is for the extra living.
Food allowance,
assistance. Yeah. They become more, higher because, it's more expensive to live in California. But if you go somewhere like Ohio, they are less because, thankfully, it's less expensive to live in Ohio. So those two elements are determined by different factors. And then you have the base pay, which is based on your rank and your years of experience, I believe.
Captain Antonio, you're the recruiter for the Air Force. When folks come up to you and ask you, "Yo, what do we make, or what can we expect to make if we join?" How do you usually respond?
Right off the bat, I tell them it is not as competitive as it is in the civilian sector. But however, what they don't factor into this equation is that you get free healthcare. You know, you get free dental for you and your family, right? And so if you imagine the paycheck that you're paying in civilian sector and how much of that goes to your insurance, you know, and things like that, that's huge, right? And so that's one of the things that's not included in your pay. And so like Alan had mentioned, there's base pay, which is dependent on rank and time in service. But then there's also BAH, which is basic housing allowance. And that's based on where you live geographically. And then you have the BAS, which is the subsistence, which is your food and allowance stuff and things like that, all the other stuff. And it's also adjusted according to family size. So those are the things that you would add in too. One of the things that we also have in the Air Force is we have like this pseudo 401k. And so where we're allowed to put in every month in our paycheck. And the military will match that, whatever you put into your account. Nice. So it's a beautiful program. I think they're really taking care of people during and after, not when they retire, but also if they decide to separate. Because back then you couldn't get any of that until you did 20 years and retired.
Yeah.
But now you can, if you need to pull out, you can. And here you go. This is what you get.
So. Oh, that's great to hear. That's really great to hear. Again, in light of the service that you provide, I think you should be getting the best medical care, the best everything out there. But I've seen the contrary just in my work. So
yeah.
I'm glad to hear that, you know, at least that's hopefully getting a little better, right, for our service members.
Oh, I think fantastic. what you have to catch is like, you can really filter out who really wants to be here based off that, right? Because if it's lucrative in the outside and you know that someone's knocking on your door to get out and you still stay in, it shows that you really love what you do. You really want to serve. You have this purpose, this constancy to purpose, and you've kept it throughout, you know? And granted, there are other things that, you know, make you leave, but for the most part, you can really tell who wants to be there and who really cares about what they do. Their people, the people they work for, their patients. So that's one of my ways of kind of filtering that out too. So the service itself will basically pay off itself.
Yes, definitely.
I love that. Oh, I think that's a great way to end our conversation today. It's been so enlightening and, you know, again, really just so impressive what you're both doing in the military. Again, you know, showcasing the uncommon side of the common yet uncommon side of occupational therapy, right? You know, we all know hand therapists, we all know the different things that you do, but then applying it in this context and with the population that you're offering the service to just kind of shifts things a little bit, right?
Definitely.
So very much appreciate your time with us. If our listeners were interested in following your path, getting in touch, is it okay if they do? And how do they do so?
Yeah, sure. For I guess from the recruitment side, you can contact me through my military email. So it's andrew.antonio@us.af.mil. So once again, andrew.antonio@us.af.mil. I would say Instagram, but my Instagram just got hacked. So if anybody in the audience knows somebody in Instagram or Facebook, please connect me with them so I can fix my Instagram.
Oh my gosh. Can't the military do anything about that?
I know. I'm asking too. They told me to hurry up and wait. So
I'm beginning to understand that phrase now.
Yeah, unfortunately.
So Captain Antonio, I guess you're not starting a coding platform.
I'm not, apparently not. So, my goodness. But yeah, here
well,
we are.
Well, I hope that gets resolved soon.
Me too. Man. Me too. But
We will list all of your info, not your Instagram, though, because we don't want to be involved with all that hacking stuff. But your other, you know, your other ways, and, you know, and all joking aside, you are the recruiter for the Air Force. So if there's anyone that people need to get in touch with, it's you. So we'll definitely have that. How about you, Captain Eloy? Can we get in touch?
Yeah, most definitely. I'll follow suit and give my military email. It's alain.t.eloi@mil.mil. Absolutely not complicated.
I love that the military has an MIL, you know, sort of dot
ending.
In the end, just to learn that, you know, with my interactions with you guys. But again, just this has been such a great, fun, informative, and just, yeah, I loved our collaborative conversation today. Thank you so much for spending the time with me and for sharing again your OT journey with our listeners.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
We have to give you praise too, Patricia. What you're doing here is huge, right? And when we talk about OT and you know how it's so broad of a scope, I truly believe that the horizons of our practice are heavily based on our advocacy. And this and what you're doing here is definitely that. And so I thank you for what you're doing in representing us and being the voice for us too. So we appreciate it and thank you.
Oh, thank you for that.
Mm-hmm. I just wanted to add, I mean, I think all of this came from when I posted that picture and you reach out pretty much out of nowhere.
I'm not honestly, shy.
Well, thank God. Thank God. Because honestly, when you reached out, my first thought was to just not respond because I'm like,
oh my gosh, she's going to hack my account.
No.
Oh gosh.
Yeah, it was more like, what do I have to see an interview? I don't really know anything about the Air Force. I'm new to this, but you know, I'm glad we get it working. And I'm, you know, I talked to my wife, and she encouraged me to do it. And you know what? It was a fun experience.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah,
I'm really really grateful to have done this with you guys.
Thank you so much. This is, you know, you're teaching, inspiring so many others out there. You know, again, I've been an OT for so many years and I've thought, wow, what is it like to be an OT in the military? And, you know, you all have your different perspectives and different stories. I've spoken with a few of you in different branches and it's each of your journeys and each of your paths are fascinating to me. So I want to share, you know, as many of these stories as I can with the OT world, because my gosh, look at the effect that it has on all of us, right? It's making us all smile.
Right.
It's making us all giddy and just excited about, you know, being in the profession that we're in. So that alone is already, you know, great payback. But then I also get to make amazing friends. Right. Amen. Now we're stuck together. Now you know me. Can't get rid of me now. That's my tagline.
Thank you.
Of course.
Big time. It's an honor. Thank you.
And that wraps up another inspiring episode of the Uncommon OT series. Connect with me at www.transitionsot.com. And don't forget to sign up to be part of the Transitions OT community. By doing so, you'll receive my latest compiled list of Uncommon OT practice settings, the latest news on mentoring offerings, Uncommon OT live events, non-traditional OT resources, and more. You may also follow me on my social media pages on Instagram and LinkedIn. And if you love this episode, head on over to Spotify, Stitcher, Apple, and Google Podcasts to follow, rate, and leave a review. I also ask you to consider pledging your support to my passion podcast project by being a patron on Patreon. It is very much appreciated. Sending big OT love. Thank you so much for listening. Until next time.